Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today's episode is going to be a two-part episode, this week and next week. The topic is trust. The biggest topic of all. Because trust is at the foundation of every relationship, whether it's a marriage, a friendship, a business partnership, trust is at the center. Even political, we have to trust our political parents, don't we? Trust is at the center of every relationship. And so I wanted to explore trust because when we think of trust, our go-to issue is always infidelity. That's obvious. There's a couple other more obvious issues of trust too, but then there are some less obvious issues of trust. So I wanted to start by A, defining trust, and then we're going to work through the obvious, the not obvious, how to spot the warning signs, and what to do about them. So let's start. Trust is at the foundation of all healthy relationships. The operative word, though, being healthy. We've all heard this, that trust has to be the central part of a good relationship. But trust is so much more important than everybody thinks. I hear it a lot in my divorce mediations. So what are some of the most obvious breaches in trust that break up a marriage? Well, infidelity, as I just mentioned. But then we have this new phenomenon over the past few years, and that's gender switches. Something else, secret behavior like gambling or drug addiction. So those are the obvious ones. But some of the less obvious issues of trust that we don't think about are a lack of emotional support and not being emotionally ready for a relationship. And even if you're in the middle of a divorce now, you may be getting married after the divorce is final. And so I want you to be able to spot things that you would never really think about that are going to be issues of trust. You may not define them as trust, but I want you to know that they are part of the underscoring of trust that absolutely has to be central to every relationship. So now let's deal with the definition of trust. And there are several. Trust is a firm belief in the reliability and truth of someone or something. Trust is confidence in the honesty or integrity of a person or thing. An example of trust is the belief that someone is being truthful with you. Isn't that what we deal with when we deal with infidelity and we have these inner feelings and we need to believe what our partner is telling us if they're denying infidelity or gambling or sex, drugs, whatever? Trusting someone means you think they're reliable, that you have confidence in them and you feel safe with them physically and emotionally. Trust is something that two people in a relationship can build together when they decide to trust one another. And there is a point when you have to decide to trust one another, isn't it? So I want to now explore several issues of trust, and I'm going to read from different articles that I researched for you. And the first thing is, why is trust important in a relationship? Well, trust is that foundation upon which your relationship can survive the hardest of times. In fact, without trust, you can't sustain your relationship for a very long time. Or you're really lying to yourself. And what you're doing is accepting a completely unacceptable, unhealthy relationship. And you have to do a lot of therapy to figure out why you are deciding to do that. And let me give you just a brief example. I'm dealing with a lovely, lovely, sweet gentleman who is getting divorced after 26 years. And everybody wants to tell their story when they come in to the legal professional that they're going to have mediate, file, or represent them in a contentious divorce. And they will always tell the story through the prism of, I've been wronged. But this is fascinating because this lovely, sweet gentleman, married over 26 years, told me stories about emotional abuse and untrustworthy behavior in his spouse throughout the entire relationship. And although you have to let somebody get it out if you're working with them, you have to let them express themselves to a certain point. If you're a therapist, that's where your work revolves around. But there's a point where you have to look at your client. And I looked at this gentleman and I said, look, although what you're describing, yes, sounds really wrong, your real issue is to decide why you accepted the relationship. Through all of these horrifying examples where you were not emotionally supported, financially supported, or just supported in terms of friendship in the marriage, your real issue is, why did you accept it? And I'm sharing this with you because I know a lot of you listening have to come to grips with that. Why did you take unacceptable behavior from your spouse? You didn't have to. Going back to the article, a lack of trust is one of the reasons for relationships to fall apart. Here is why trust is the driving factor in relationships. One, you cannot love, you cannot truly love without trusting a person. Trust is the building block of love. Just like how a child trusts their mother and thereby loves her, your partner needs to know that you are trustworthy. Excuse me, and won't ditch them in difficult times. This feeling is important for love to sprout and flourish. So we trust that our parents love us. We trust that whatever we do wrong, our parents will be by our sides. You know, unfortunately, that's not the truth with some parents. But that's how we trust. And it really, you know, since politics is such a lightning rod right now, you know, the people we vote for are our political parents. And do you really feel that all of our political parents love us? Do you think your employer loves you? Do you think your employer is doing the best for you? How about your friendships? Do you feel your friends are always going to be there for you? So it's very interesting how we can use trust and look at it throughout all of our choices in relationships. All right, number two, trust helps overcome obstacles. It is the binding factor for all cracks and differences in a relationship. You know deep down that you can overcome problems and feel safe and secure with your partner if you have trust. Number three, trust helps in healing. When you get hurt in your relationship, you get over it due to the deep trust you have in your spouse. Number four, trust helps control your emotions. Now, this is interesting because who would think about this? Well, I didn't until I read this. The degree to which you trust a person determines how much of yourself you want to give to him or her. If you are hurt by them, it is only trust that tells you that there must be some reason behind their hurtful behavior. Number five, trust is reassuring. Trust gives you the reassurance that your partner loves you despite the arguments and fights that you might have. That is the key to a long-lasting relationship. Six, with trust, you don't need justifications. And I think about your disputes and how this factors in. When you trust your partner, absolutely, you don't need to explain or justify anything. You know that your partner will understand and trust your reactions and decisions. That's really fascinating because if you look at a relationship that's really long lasting and listen to them talk about each other, watch them dialogue, you will see that they don't nitpick each other. They just kind of blow off decisions their spouse has, trusting the decisions were made in good faith. Number seven, It teaches you trust about personal time and space. Trust teaches you about personal time and space. Sorry about that. You don't feel insecure about giving your partner their space. In fact, trust helps you stay close in spite of the obstacles. Okay, so we're going to tackle this in another section a little bit later, but everybody needs their personal time and space, even in a marriage. You have to have your secret self, your silent self, not your secret self. You have to have your silent self. This was something that was in Sex and the City, one of the episodes. We all have our secret silent selves. We all need to spend time by ourselves with other people. We can't just do every single thing with our partner, but trust allows us to let go and let our partner be off by themselves and not worry about what they're doing. So important, trust. Okay, now, what trust is and what trust isn't in a relationship? And we kind of mix this up sometimes. So, trust is knowing. I never even thought about it this way. This was really helpful to me. Trust is knowing. It's knowing that you can depend on someone to come through for you, to go to bat for you, or to simply be there for you. And trust is believing. It's believing in something you cannot see. It's feeling something strong enough in your gut to act on it. Trust is the ultimate form of intimacy. It's a sense of knowing that even when the going gets tough, trust gets going. I love that. Even when the going gets tough, trust gets going. Perhaps a good way to define trust is to define what trust isn't now. Distrust is bridled in skepticism. It's mistaken perceptions which are caused by excess garbage in the heart and mind. Distrust is the outgrowth of self-doubt and guilt. Distrust is disillusion and fear. It has the temperament of defensiveness and shows a lack of interest because it seeks to hide itself. Distrust is imprisonment, while trust is an attempt to set someone free. Have you ever been upset when your partner told you that he or she wanted to hang out with their friends without you? Where do these feelings come from? A sense of rejection, surprise, disappointment from some other relationships in the past, maybe not even the one you're going through, but some other ones, or maybe the one you're going through. Sometimes those feelings are distrust. Ask yourself why the news bothers you, why the request to be by your partner's self with their friends doesn't sit well with you. Then ask yourself if it's because you don't actually trust that your partner would rather be with you than his or her friends overall. So overall, the person we're with, that's the person we should want to be with primarily. But you do need a balance in your lives. You do need to be with other people and just do things that your partner probably wouldn't want to do, because you can't do every single thing with your partner. You do have to have lots of common interests, but not every single one, and that's okay. This doesn't mean your lack of trust is without blame, though. It takes two people to cultivate trust in a relationship. Insufficient trust means that something's wrong on the inside, and therefore outsiders pose a threat to the delicate balance in a relationship and threaten the cornerstones of the relationship. So that's what trust is and what it is not. Now, this next thing I'm going to read to you, the five stages of trust. Now, we've all heard of the five stages of grief. I've done a previous podcast episode on this. If you're in therapy, people talk about the five stages of grief in therapy, especially if you've lost someone so significant in your life that you really need a therapist to talk about it. So there's the five stages of grief. But in reading these articles, I'm now reading there are the five stages of trust, and here's what they are. Number one is connection. We're drawn to someone and feel a connection, which propels us to start the process of building a relationship, whether it's a romantic relationship, a friendship, or a business relationship. The connection motivates us to invest the time necessary to properly connect. Number two, step two, caution. This is really important. Caution. We cautiously start to pursue the possibility of trust in this fledgling relationship. We start creating opportunities where we can observe this person's character in action and allow them to view the same in us. We're careful to proceed with caution and patience because the process of building trust is delicate and it requires time. Whenever trust is broken in a relationship, we must always return to this second stage and proceed with caution to allow trust to rebuild through the remaining stages. Now, I'm going to just take a little tangential moment here and tell you that towards the end of last year, I was approached by somebody, a man who I really connected with immediately upon meeting him. But everything happened so fast and furiously, it completely caught me off guard. His approach to connection, it was as if we skipped all the building stages. And I didn't understand exactly where it was going. And it went from 0 to 100, and then it crashed and burned quickly because I wasn't experiencing those normal steps in getting to know you, the activities that you have to participate in to see somebody in their normal, organic, natural state. And it crashed and burned because it had to. I didn't understand who this person was, although I really felt there was the intellect that I wanted, there was the heart that I wanted, and there was the energy that I wanted, but I didn't really get to see this person in different situations because we really didn't go out and do anything except the activity in which I met him. And so when I read this, I said, okay, so my reluctance was normal. And if you're experiencing this, if you're meeting somebody that wants to go from 0 to 100 in, oh my God, we're meant to be together, take a step back. That's a signal you need to pay attention to. And it doesn't mean this person is horrible. This means this person doesn't know how to develop a relationship properly. And if you can't develop a relationship properly, the relationship can't evolve properly. And you can't open up and be vulnerable and present yourself in the way that you need to with the foundation of trust being there. So let's move forward now to stage three. Consistency. This is where trust truly begins to form. Consistency is the primary ingredient of trust. When we observe consistency in honest words and actions from someone, we naturally let our guard down and can experience the deeper levels of relational intimacy that trust always makes possible. Their consistency gives us the courage to take the next step. And stage four is courage. Trust is rooted in viewing consistency in another person, but it still requires an element of faith and courage. This is the point in the relationship where we're ready to put our heart on the line, or money on the line if it's a business relationship. We're willing to assume some risk, which is required in every relationship because we now feel safe and secure in this person. So in order to connect, we need to proceed with caution. There has to be a consistency in how our relationship unfolds, and then we have to have the courage to participate in revealing ourselves. And stage number five, then, is commitment. Our courage to trust always leads to commitment. Every relationship requires some level of commitment, and the level of our commitment will ultimately define the level of our relationship. This is more pronounced in a marriage relationship, where the commitment is a sacred, lifelong vow. But even in friendship and business relationships, some level of commitment is always required. I think this is great. The five stages of trust are connection, caution, consistency, courage, and commitment. And if they don't unfold in that way, your relationship isn't going to be great. So look at that if you're getting divorced now, but also look at that when you're ready to form another relationship. And lastly for today, the ways to build trust in a relationship. So I'm going to give you the really serious ones, and then I'm going to end with something a little bit more tongue-in-cheek because we need to have a little fun with this. So here are the serious ones. Here are ways to build trust in a relationship. Be true to your word. And this is your part in building trust in a relationship now. Be true to your word. Honor your commitments and don't make promises you can't keep. That will destroy trust so fast. Communicate effectively. Be clear about your commitments. Don't say things you don't mean. Don't promise things you can't do. And again, I'm going to break for a minute. You know, I thought I could have children if I met the right person, although I really never wanted children. I really wanted a different type of life. And when I was ready to get married, I put that aside and I said, no, I'll have children. I mean, this was really my downfall in the relationship, in the marriage. And when push came to shove, I just couldn't make that commitment to have children. And that was one of the biggest factors that I think broke up the marriage. So that's me. I made a commitment I couldn't keep. And after that, I really paid attention to what I said I couldn't do. And my process was gradual, and yours will be too. So when you want to correct a behavior where you make commitments that you can't keep just because you think this is the right thing to do in a relationship, it'll be a gradual process of you're going to make commitments you can't keep, but then pull back immediately, apologize and say, you know what, I shouldn't have said that. And that's how you train yourself to only make commitments that you can keep. And if you can't stay in a relationship because you can't make those commitments, so be it, because it's going to fall apart anyway. Okay, then another way is build trust gradually. Take small steps. Don't expect too much too soon. And that kind of piggybacks on what I just said about it's going to be a gradual process. If you're prone to making commitments just to be a people pleaser, that's the worst thing you can do. And you're going to have to train yourself to get out of that habit. Make decisions carefully. Think about committing before you commit. Be organized so that you can honor your commitments. And have the courage to say no. And that's huge. That's my hardest thing. Having the courage to say no. It really is. But I'm telling you, as I train myself, and being a mediator has been one of the best things for me because I have to walk the walk and live the talk. When I can say no, that this isn't right for me, whether it's in business, and I have made commitments to take on business that I should have never done, and they have come back to bite me in two horrible Yelp reviews. I should have never taken on two pieces of business. They weren't right for me, and I didn't realize it. Well, one I did, and I just took it on anyway, and one I realized it late in the game, and I continued anyway when I should have just discontinued service. So it will come back to haunt you, even in a business relationship. It will. Live and learn. Be consistent. Trust is built from consistency. Participate openly in a relationship. Show your willingness to trust. Listen actively and give feedback respectfully. Be honest. Oh, this is so important. Be honest. Always tell the truth. I cannot tell you when I'm dealing with my clients even, and they want to say, well, if I say this, then possibly my spouse won't get mad, or maybe this can be done easier. Always tell the truth. It will always come back to bite you. Always tell the truth. Lies diminish trustworthiness. So I just watched a movie over the Easter weekend, and it was Sex and the City Part 2. I love the series Sex and the City, and I love the movies. And I was watching a scene where Steve, even if you don't know it, it's a typical scene, where Steve, married to Miranda, one of the four key principal characters, the attorney friend in Sex and the City, Steve told Miranda he had had an affair. And it didn't mean anything. And he had an affair because for 6 months, Miranda wasn't having sex with him. She wasn't being a partner to him. And so he needed to have sex. He came clean. It devastated Miranda. And they had to go through a whole rebuilding process. And it took a very long time. And eventually, at the end of the day, she came to grips with she really loved him. He was really the right person for her. And so they went through a series of trust building exercises and talks. They talked a lot. And Miranda had to come to grips with her part in that. And her part in that was she wasn't committed to being a wife. And it's hard once you have children, they had a child. And if you're still working as a mom, this is really tough stuff. You don't have anything left at the end of the day. But at the end of the day, you have to be a partner or you're going to lose that relationship. So be very careful when you decide to have children. And if you're going to continue to work, you're still going to be expected to be a wife. This is tough for women. And if you're not, and your husband or other partner, if you're in a gay or lesbian relationship, if they need their needs met, they're going to be met. Biology will win. Know that going into your marriage. And you have to figure out a way to still be a wife. Tough, but real. Okay, next. Help people. Now, why is this a trust-building exercise? Authentic kindness builds trust. Okay, this is interesting because if you look at a person that you know who is constantly and totally kind, don't you trust that person? There's a level of trust when we see people being consistently kind as part of their nature. And if you see your spouse being consistently kind, there's just an element of trust there. You trust that if they're kind to other people, of course, they're going to be kind and trustworthy with you. This is another hard part about building trust. Show your feelings. So this goes back to being vulnerable. Being open about your emotions, showing you care builds trust, and practice emotional intelligence. Oh my God. So who's emotionally intelligent? Very intelligent. Very few of us. We really have to work on emotional intelligence. I don't think many people know how to be emotionally intelligent. I think that the way you're raised is part and parcel of how you are as an emotionally intelligent person. But emotional intelligence, at the end of the day, wins because we have to be clear about why we feel a certain way. Why we react in a certain way. And it goes back to how we were raised, what we experienced, and how we saw our parents deal with emotion. Avoid self-promotion. Okay. This is huge. Self-promotion is a key of a narcissist. A narcissist will always be about themselves. Recognizing others builds trust and good relationships, but a narcissist can't do that. And that's the personality of disorder of the day. Narcissism is rampant right now. And if you're in a relationship that's all about the other person, then you're dealing with narcissism. You're dealing with somebody who can only talk about themselves, and that doesn't really help in a relationship. Excuse me. A little bit of dust in the air. Do what you believe is right. So if you think that having children isn't right, you got to say it. Honesty is respected. Yes, people aren't trusted. When we say yes to things just because we want to get along, if you are a yes person in your marriage, this is why you're getting divorced, because you can't be a yes person your whole life. You'll die. Your spirit, your soul will die. You have to do what's true to yourself. You have to be what you believe is right. You can't be what your partner wants you to be. You can't be what your partner thinks is right for you. You can only do what's right for you based on what you think. And admit mistakes. Honesty, again, we keep coming back to honesty. Honesty encourages trust. Showing vulnerability builds trust. And we continue on. Say what you mean what you say. This is from another article. If you're looking to increase trust within your relationship, it's imperative that you stop saying things that you won't follow through on, or that you don't represent your actual feelings. Even what seem like minor lies, and we all tell them, don't we? We'll tell the other person that they should no longer trust the things that come out of your mouth. So being a yes person is going to bite you in the end. And being vulnerable. In relationships that we choose in our personal lives, we build trust through vulnerability. Some of this comes automatically with time and daily interactions, like knowing if our partner said they'd pick up us at the airport. I mean, this is ridiculous, but sometimes people don't follow through with that. We have to trust they're going to be there, right? Being emotionally vulnerable is important, though, as well. Building trust takes a willingness to open ourselves up to the potential risk of being hurt. Talking about something embarrassing from your past, letting them in on what scares you in the here and now, showing parts of yourself that you don't think are attractive enough for a first date level. That means physically, by the way. There's a lot of trust in taking our clothes off, isn't there? A lot of trust in that. Unless we're such a sexual animal and we really are proud of our bodies, then clothes come off. Trust is built when our partners have the opportunity to let us down or hurt us, but do not. And in order for them to pass the test and build that trust, we must make ourselves vulnerable to that letdown. Gradually is best, of course, to protect ourselves along the way. Now, let me tell you something. When we share our fears and our concerns, that's the best thing we can ever do in a relationship. Because if we're with the right person, that will open them up to sharing their concerns and vulnerabilities. And that will connect you so powerfully. You know, I did a podcast with somebody that shared the podcast episode with their friends because it was the opening up of what transpired in this person's two previous marriages. And what he told me was exactly what I wanted to have happen with these podcasts and what I encourage when I talk about honesty and sharing your real feelings. His friends opened up to him about things they had never talked about. And he bridged a deeper friendship with those people. And that just made my heart sing. I love that that was a very positive result of him doing a podcast episode with me. But whenever we share, even in mediations, I see this happen all the time. when finally we can get to a mediation, a point in the mediation where we say, well, this is why I really did what I did. And without blame, we share the hurt we experienced in a situation that that occurred between the two spouses. It's like the wall just melted. And I remember that in one of my earlier mediations, that the reason for this inability to come to terms with a division of two assets, it was because of a hurt that never got dealt with years before that. And once they talked about that hurt, mediation, they didn't even need me to finish the mediation. They told me what their decision was. That's how important vulnerability is, and just sharing how we really think and feel. It does wonders for the relationship, and it does wonders for you to really see if you're with the right person. And then lastly, on this little list, remember the role of respect. One of the most emotionally lasting ways that our partners can damage us and our trust is by belittling us, making us feel less than, or viewing us with condescension, sorry about that, or contempt rather than respect. Unfortunately, when we are tightly intertwined with someone, we sometimes show them our worst, which can be positive in terms of being vulnerable to them, but it also may involve treating them badly. You must remember that every time you treat your spouse in a way that demeans them or violates that basic minimum of dignity and respect, you harm your connection and you make it more difficult for them to trust you over time. How many times do people come here and talk about being belittled? That's what drove the marriage into a divorce. And it's just so easy to do that. It's so easy to get comfortable and then pick on the traits that annoy you about your spouse and just hurt them. But a lot of times, the person who belittles, it's really to fill a void in them that they don't feel proud of themselves. And in order to feel proud of themselves, they will belittle the partner that they're with. And that just destroys everything. This entails the maturity. The respect entails the maturity of being able to talk about feelings without escalating into shouting, verbally attacking, or closing down the conversation. You have to learn to discuss challenging emotions in ways that don't automatically jump to feeling threatened or starting a conflict. Many of us have taken cues from our parents about how to talk or not talk about tough things. It all comes back from what we learned. It all stems from what we learned growing up. And sometimes those patterns can stunt us. But if you truly want to build trust with someone, you've got to give them the opportunity to make the connection to the real you, including who you are emotionally. And it has to be done with respect. Now, here are the ridiculous ones that I wanted to share with you before we conclude this episode. So here they are. She shares all her feelings with you. Okay, if you're a man, there's a cutoff point. There's a point where, thank you for sharing your feelings, honey, but enough is enough. And honey, if you're the woman who likes to share everything, there's a point where nobody wants to hear everything. So share, but come on. You need to know when to cut it off. He looks for excuses to touch you. Well, wouldn't that be great? But there's a point when it's too much. He admits when he's wrong. Okay, thank you very much. But does that always work? With Steve and Miranda, it didn't, at least in the short run, it didn't. But really, I don't think he is ever, or she is ever going to admit when they're always wrong. She gushes about the details of her day. Can you take it? You've just gone through a long issue of work on your own. Don't you want silence sometimes? He drops everything to talk to you. Seriously? Really? Who does that? Who drops everything to talk to you? Well, maybe in the initial stages, not after you're married. You share a bank account. Well, you know, that's interesting because so many times people come here that don't share bank accounts. So sharing a bank account does show a lot of trust. I agree. Does not sharing bank accounts mean you don't trust each other? I mean, that's really interesting to think about because a lot of people come here and they don't ever share bank accounts. But these people have only been married a couple years. So maybe sharing bank accounts is an issue of trust. She goes out of her way to put you at ease. Well, isn't this codependent? Are you supposed to go out of your way to put the other person at ease? I don't know. She lets you do all the talking. Okay, is that healthy? I'm not sure that is. Do you need to do all the talking? Is that important to you if you're the big talker? His questions don't feel like an interrogation, or hers either. I don't know why these are gender specific, but I thought they were funny. She hands you her phone, or he hands you his phone, while they're driving, or anytime. Okay, that phone is the daily diary. That phone has replaced the diary. On our phones, our lives exist. Do you really want anybody to see your phone? Now that's a big issue of trust. If we can hand our phones to anybody and not care, I think that's interesting. You are her priority. Well, okay, our spouses are absolutely supposed to be our priority, but not at the risk of not prioritizing ourselves. And I think that's where we have to be careful when we prioritize our other spouse. That's above everybody else, but not above ourselves. We have to be central to our own priority. She takes care of your interests. Well, okay, we have to be mindful of our spouse's interests. And if they are a sports nut and we're not, you got to let them watch sports. Or that's going to be a big issue. You can't make that a fighting issue. Sports is an outlet for people. Playing them or watching them. It's an outlet. We have to let our spouses have that outlet. Going to the gym is an outlet. We have to do that. Mingling with your family and friends. Well, isn't that supposed to be part of what we do? But who was it? It's got to be a reality show that I was watching where she wasn't allowed to contact his family and friends. And I forget what that is, but it is a reality show. Yes, they're getting divorced because of that. Maintaining eye contact. I mean, that's interesting. That's the last one I'm going to mention. But, you know, that is a trigger. It's not as ridiculous as I guess I thought it was initially. But if your spouse isn't looking at you, or the person you're dating doesn't always look at you or use your name, you have a problem. You have a problem. Because eye contact is really important. And when I do mediations, I look at body language and I listen to tone of voice. I watch if people look at me when they're talking. But if your partner or spouse isn't looking at you when they talk, serious issue. So that's our episode on trust today. Really important. And so next week, we're going to continue with examples and situations and how to handle trust in a variety of ways. So thank you so much for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please share this with your friends. I know that every subject will be important to you. If you would like to reach me, you can go on my website, divorceresourceinc.com, divorceresourceinc.com. If you would like to contact me through email and add a topic that you would like me to deal with, you can reach me at Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com. Thank you so much, and I look forward to our next episode.